Well, good morning, Tino Garish. Fantastic to have you on the podcast today. I am so thrilled to introduce our guest, Tino Tereshko, who's been on the BigQuery product management team, has been for about 6 years, and our CTO, Garish, ready to have a chat and conversation about BigQuery in 2020. Garish, let me pass it over to you to kick off.
Okay, great. Thanks, Megan. Hey, Tino, great to be chatting with you. I know we've met a few times over the years, but just as an introduction, I lead the technical team here at SpringML. Been involved with a lot of the Google tech stack implementations around data analytics and data warehousing. Really eager to pick your brain on, you know, how you see this space evolving, what you've seen in the customer landscape, and what we as partners can do, and what other, in your discussions with CIOs and such, what you're seeing as far as where the industry is heading. So very looking forward to this discussion. Do you want to say a couple of quick words about your background? I know you've done a lot of, you've been with BigQuery for a, it seems right from its very early days, and you have a lot of SQL and just database background as such. Any quick words of introduction?
Yes, thanks, Garish. First of all, I want to thank you folks for having me on your podcast. And I want to thank you for doing the awesome work of solving our customers' problems using our tooling. It's really exciting to see some of the customer stories, customer success stories that are coming out of SpringML that are using BigQuery and Dataflow and the rest of our platform. So appreciate it again. And a little bit about me. I've been at Google for a little bit over 6 years now, most of it working in our data and analytics space. And a product manager on BigQuery directly for the past 2.5 years. And the reason I kind of moved over to the product management space is because I really wanted to impact the product directly, right? I wanted to solve customer problems. I wanted to deliver certain features that I thought were really, really important for our customers. And being a product manager is probably one of the best ways to do that.
Awesome. That's great to hear. And like you said, you've been involved with GCP and BigQuery over the last few years. And, you know, we've all seen SpringML has been around for 5 years. We've seen the evolution, right? From the outside, we've seen how rapidly BigQuery has evolved. And even in the last few, maybe even the last couple of months, it seems like the innovation has just been coming out at a much, much more rapid pace. And we'll get to that in a minute, but how do you see, you know, over the years, this innovation? What keeps the team interested and excited to bring out such innovations at this rapid pace?
That's an interesting point. So, for one, is we continue to make ever increasing investments in the space, right? So, what you're seeing is just there's more people working to solve more problems. The other is we really see ourselves as a smart analytics platform. We're not just kind of like an end-to-end data warehouse. And when you think about what is possible in a smart analytics platform, the space is just completely open-ended. And to, you know, the way you can think about what we've been doing over the years is we really started out as kind of like a serverless analytics tool. And over the years, we've added many, many things that enterprises want, many things that really make us a data warehouse. We added enterprise-friendly pricing. We added manageability, administration, a lot of things like that. And in the meantime, we acquired essentially the four largest data warehouses in the world run on top of BigQuery, right? So we kind of have a lot of these proof points. We've solved a lot of these problems that only the largest environments in the world have. And, you know, being able to solve this for Google first was definitely helpful. And then we expanded our space in laterally into functionality like real-time data warehousing, native integrated business intelligence that runs in memory, machine learning, geospatial capabilities, public data sets, so on and so forth. We're kind of expanding what you can do with a data warehouse. We're really rethinking that notion in general. And of course, in the past year or so, we've acquired Looker, and we're super excited to integrate with Looker, one of the leaders in the BI space.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that's great because, you know, on one hand, you have this incredible innovation leading the industry in terms of new features that customers are not used to from their legacy data warehouse players. Like you mentioned, you know, integrating machine learning and other features, but also at the same time, just from a practical standpoint, you know, we've seen the features such as materialized views, that to, you know, integer partitioning, all of these things that have a more immediate impact and allows users to or customers to have a much faster adoption of BigQuery without any, you know, any cons or any specific feature that they feel may be missing, right? So is there any additional, you know, how does that roadmap get finalized? How anything that you can share around your and your team's thinking, how the roadmap, how features get prioritized, et cetera?
Yeah, I think the way we approach our roadmap is really by thinking about what do our customers want and what would our customers potentially want. And so there needs to be some healthy mix of solving immediate customer needs, right? Somebody says they need a specific feature, and it's a very compelling feature. We're going to try and go and build that feature. And that really drives a good amount of our roadmap. At the same time, we are making investments in new areas, right? So real time, you may have noticed recently, we built a new backend for it. And there's so much we can do here to enhance the real-time story. So that's kind of one of our pillars that we'll continue to further unpack. BI and ML that I mentioned before. There are so many other things that we're doing, administration and pricing, for example. These are all kind of pillars that we continue to zoom in on and continue to invest in until we get to a point where we're, you know, potentially there's nothing more to do, which hasn't really happened very often in that pillar. And then maybe we'll retire it. But overall, it's kind of like portfolio management, right? You have to have some of your low yield, really safe bets. But you also need to make these large 10x bets. Like Google likes to say 10x. So we really truly believe in that. We want to always be thinking about something really innovative that we could potentially build, but also has a high failure rate.
That's a great analogy, Tino. The portfolio management and making sure that you have the right balance. That makes a lot of sense. One other feature that I know personally that a lot of customers have also inquired about that came out recently, more from the ecosystem, if you will, is how Presto SQL can now run on top of BigQuery as well, right? Mm-hmm. So that allows additional options for those users who have real-time requirements to query and get data access and such. Is that something that is that customers can expect is more of a commitment towards a larger ecosystem, right, that BigQuery is now part of?
Excellent question. I think, tactically speaking, what that particular feature does is it sits on top of BigQuery storage API, which is kind of a unique feature of BigQuery. In data warehousing, it's typically very hard for non-data warehousing workload to work with the data within the data warehouse. Like, for example, if you have Hadoop or Spark running somewhere, it's really difficult for those workloads to touch your data warehouse storage at high levels of velocity. So we built a storage API that allows those frameworks and those compute those clusters to connect to BigQuery storage directly and to essentially read from BigQuery storage the same way you would read from HDFS, high levels of throughput, high levels of parallelization. And then we built a Presto connector, right? So now you can have a Presto cluster that connects directly to BigQuery storage and runs on top of BigQuery storage just like HDFS. Thinking of this feature, thinking of features like our Cloud SQL Federation, Parquet and Org Federation, support for Hive Metastore. You think about everything that we're doing in this kind of space. We are thinking about opening up our data warehouse to other use cases. And the way we think about this is in both ways. One is our execution engine should be able to go and talk to any storage engine out there, right? Any data warehouse. So it could be a relational database, could be object storage, could be NoSQL, and so on and so forth. So that's one of the key pillars, which is the federation pillar. And the other is our storage should not be only accessible by our native SQL compute. Right? So you should be able to query our storage from something like Presto or Spark, and so on and so forth. Right? So we've seen a lot of that come to fruition in the past year. Right? There's been a lot of launches that kind of filling in the blanks around what you can do with the query storage and the query compute from the outside world. Yeah.
Got it. That's amazing. I mean, I love that vision where, on one hand, you have a lot of the decoupled storage and compute already, but and federated queries, it's like taking one step further where, it's not just the SQL, but any layer that can now access the engine.
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. One of the things, like you mentioned, just talking about Hadoop and Hadoop ecosystem, or even again, if you look at the existing customers who are used to their existing data warehouses, one of the most common surprising things that they hear when we talk about BigQuery is, wait, you mean to say there are no indexes? So it takes a little bit of time explaining how the underlying infrastructure works, and once they start seeing the results, obviously they are super surprised. But in your conversations, what are some of the other potential questions or concerns that customers typically express when making that decision to move to BigQuery?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and of course, coming from a relational database world where indexes is king, we did listen to these types of customers and we launched cluster keys, which is kind of like indexes, but for the MPP world, right? For the columnar store. And it has a lot of the exactly the same benefits for BigQuery. I think there's definitely a slight change in technologies when it comes from kind of like legacy relational databases, legacy data warehouses, and you go to something like BigQuery, there are things that you have to rethink. But one of the customers that I worked with was migrating from Teradata, and they showed me all the various charts that they use to kind of understand that that their system is healthy. And what was surprising to them is that the vast majority of these charts are completely not necessary in BigQuery, right? They just it's something that BigQuery handles intrinsically. So I'll give you a couple of examples. For example, IOPS. Right? You never have to worry about IOPS. It's just something that is not a bottleneck on our side, and it's just something that we take care of on your behalf for you. Right? Network throughput. You never have to worry about network throughput. It's just something that we take care of. It's never a bottleneck. How about scratch space? Like a lot of customers wonder, like, am I going to run out of disk space? Am I going to run out of local SRD space? We're the only data warehouse in the world with true separation of storage and compute, which means that we don't rely on local storage at all. So we don't have these performance cliffs. We don't have these limits that are unexpected when you run out of local storage. And so there's just a lot less to monitor. And at the same time, when we tell the customers that we just run lots of background processes, continuously delivering new features without any degradation, new security patches, all these things, our customers are kind of baffled because they don't know this is happening until we tell them, right? It's so interruption-free. We're optimizing our storage, we're optimizing our compute and our queries. It's so transparent to them that they don't even know that it's happening. It's just kind of something that they get from BigQuery. And until we tell them that this is happening, until we tell them in a blog post and release notes and so forth that we're doing this, there's simply zero awareness. So just overall, some people might say the black box, but really is autonomy, right? We we automate so much of the daily toil of somebody running a data warehouse. Like you just have to worry about so far less things. And that's kind of hard to, you know, for folks who want to have a lot of control, that's kind of hard to adjust to.
Yep, no doubt. And I think that I can tell you, even from a practical implementation standpoint, that is the thing that allows us to move rapidly and deploy solutions very rapidly, right? I mean, most of the infrastructure is available. It's a managed service. But not only that, the partitioning and clustering, those are the two levers that we need to focus on and set up the database or the tables. We don't need to worry about any of the other infrastructure, like you said, IOPS or sizing the databases, sizing the disks. All of those are not necessary. So
And I will actually, you know, sorry to interrupt. I'll give you a great example of you talked about indexes, right? So when somebody sets up indexes in a database, you have to maintain them, right? You potentially have to rebuild the indexes every once in a while. There is some operational overhead. And of course, many databases have built tooling about, you know, to help with that. But the way we handle this is, so we have clustering, which is, you can think of it as an index. It's weekly sorted data. Sorting data on disk, kind of similar to indexes, basically. And just like with indexes, over time, with any storage system like this, these clusterings and indexes can become less effective, right? As more data gets loaded, the storage system can be more fragmented, can become less efficient. So what the industry typically does is introduce a process that you can run. So for example, Redshift has Vacuum, Azure has SQL Index Rebuild, Snowflake and BigQuery have automatic clustering. But what we do uniquely is that we just do this for our customers without them doing anything about it, right? You do this in the background using some logic, and we take care of it. It's just something that happens for our customers completely autonomously without them knowing about it. And that's really unique. And the other thing is we don't even charge our customers for it. We do spend a lot of CPU and RAM running these processes, but they're free to our customers, right? We're just kind of included in the service. And that's very unique. And I feel like a lot of our customers, when they learn that this is how we operate, gives them a little bit of peace of mind.
In terms of, you know, we touched briefly about ETL. ETL is obviously a big part of any BigQuery implementation. And most often the tools that we use in our implementations like Google Native Dataflow or even Data Fusion more recently.
Mm-hmm.
How are you seeing that piece evolve, you know, just in terms of the industry and where is the ETL, right? Because that also for the customer standpoint, that's where they see the complexity of the integration piece. So,
That's an interesting question as well. Really the way we think about ETL or ELT, like just preparing data, munging it, it's really subject to customer preference on our platform. We give you, like you already mentioned, Dataflow, you mentioned Data Fusion. It's kind of up to our customer to decide which tool is best for them. And, you know, SpringML and Google, you know, we try to educate our customers on what are the pros and cons of each one. But what we're seeing in terms of trends is kind of a shift towards real time, driven in many ways by Dataflow, in many ways by BigQuery streaming capability. You don't need to sacrifice semantics, and you don't need to introduce operational complexity when you go from batch to streaming, right? And that's kind of a really interesting value proposition, right? You can have free streaming for free and not suffer through, you know, lots of pain operationalizing it. And so what a lot of our customers are doing is they are actually using Dataflow in conjunction with BigQuery, right? And Dataflow is that heavyweight, real-time ETL engine, and then that data gets loaded into BigQuery. Or they will actually use our streaming API to load data directly into BigQuery. So a great example is King, the makers of Candy Crush, which I just looked it up, the most popular mobile game of all time. So all of the clicks and all of the game level and achievements that are happening in Candy Crush, they go directly to BigQuery, right? They're using our real-time API, which is a really, really simple architecture. Right? I'm sure you've seen this in the wild as well. Very simple, right? Straight from the app server, straight to BigQuery, and then you can do some ETL on top of it there, which is a very, very powerful, pattern. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And you know, with the new like stored procedures and other capabilities available, that once data is in BigQuery, we have several options to do additional ETL and aggregations and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Including materialized views and the AI engine. And there's so much more to build there as well for us.
Absolutely. Yep. Great. What about, you know, as a partner, right? SpringML, we do a lot of these implementations. We educate our customers through webinars, lunch and learn sessions, things like that. We've also built from Dataflow connectors to other systems so that it becomes easier for customers to integrate data into BigQuery. There, you know, a lot of the education around new features like the like reservations, data cataloging, you know, those are also coming up a lot. Data cataloging, especially for, you know, large customers, they want to have a much better understanding of their data. So that's a great feature. So anything there or any other pointers that we should keep in mind when we are working hand in hand with customers?
Excellent. Let me think about that one. Well, selfishly, I think reservation is a feature that I worked on and super excited about that one, of course. We recently launched Flex Slots, which is kind of gives you the ability to buy slots and delete them and cancel them whenever you want. Right. There's only a 60-second initial billing period, and after that, you get charged per second. And so this really opens the door for you to scale instantly and to do things very, very efficiently in BigQuery in terms of pricing, in terms of performance, that you really couldn't do before. And in terms of why this is so interesting is also because our serverless, stateless architecture means that when we scale you, we can do it nearly instantly. It takes us a couple of seconds to get you your capacity. We don't have kind of VMs to run. And we also don't need to kind of warm up these VMs. We don't need to hydrate the local cache. So whenever you get this capacity, it's you know, top performance from the moment you get it, right? There's no these touch distances, performance clicks, and all these inefficiencies. So FlexBots is definitely something that your customers should check it out because it's a very, very powerful tool. And we're going to build more capability on top of FlexBots in the near term as well.
Got it. Nice. Because, you know, like you said, that those are the, again, when enterprises are making the leap, those are some features that that gives them that much more comfort, right? That you're used to a certain cost control they want to have.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Yep, awesome. Well, good points, good discussion, Tino. Now, I have a couple of more fun questions, if you're ready for it.
sure, absolutely.
Great. So let's start with this one. Actually, this is something that you tweeted, and it really made me tickle because the question was posted on your Twitter that says, product manager survey time. What percentage of your job is pointing folks to the right documents? That came out as a winner with more than 50%. Is that frustration coming out that it's all documented, folks? Just read the manual.
No, I think it's a really interesting dynamics when we have here in Google Cloud with product management is everyone has access to us, right? Anyone can ping me and ask me a question. Fairly accessible, fairly open. And so that's an amazing culture. And of course, the downside of that is that we get asked so many questions. And that really drives us to improve our documentation and to simplify everything that we do, right? So it's a great feedback point. Typically what happens is folks will ask me a question. If I know it's not the documentation, we'll go and update the documentation. And after a while, folks ask me a question, and I just kind of give them the link to the documentation, right? So after a while, if your documentation is really good, that kind of become, you just kind of become like you do that a lot, right? You just show people where the right information is. So that's kind of a really awesome part of the job. And so in Jest, you can look at your day and you can realize that you've spent a decent amount of time doing it. But that's great, right? That's, folks are learning. So
absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, but on the point of documentation, I've received that feedback and compliment from customers as well, that the Google documentation, first of all, it's consistent. So if you go from one product to another, you can expect the same kind of structure. You have the concepts, you have samples, you have tutorials, a similar kind of structure that makes it easy for somebody to browse and get up to speed quickly.
Yeah, and the stuff that you guys are doing as well to explain our platform, we have great documentation experts, product management engineering, we all write documentation as well. But even beyond that, we have solution architecture teams, we have education teams, and they're all producing content that kind of helps to kind of up-level understanding of what we're doing. And of course, if you haven't seen it, there's a new book out written by Jordan Tigani and Lack that is talks about BigQuery like no other source does. So if you're interested in BigQuery, definitely take a look at that book.
Yep, definitely will do. Awesome. And then last question, how are you holding up in these uncertain, strange times? Any movies or book recommendations that you make, any good books or anything that you've read recently?
No, that's an interesting question. So I will say that, I've been fortunate to be able to work from home. And so for me, it's really first world problems, right? The adjustment to have to work from home, I can't complain too much. And my wife is an author, so she gives me good suggestions to what to read. A book called All the Light You Cannot See is one I recommend. It's about 1940s, a little town in France that's kind of undergoing the invasion. That's a really fun is not the right word, but it's a really good read. But also to kind of take a step back, I think, this is a really challenging time and for a lot of folks. And, it's all we can do is be there and provide folks with the tooling that could help them and help their businesses thrive and make the right decisions. Right. And because especially today, you have to be diligent. You have to be data driven in order to make the right decisions. Right. Being able to provide a platform where that can be fairly inexpensive, fairly efficient for our customers is really something that we're taking seriously lately. And you can look at some of the blogs that we posted recently about what we're doing around, helping the community with coronavirus research and awareness as well.
Definitely. We'll do, and we'll take it out. We'll look at the book recommendation as well. Thank you, Tino. It was great chatting with you. Appreciate your time.
Yes.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you so much, folks. Yeah, it's been really fun.
We'll put a link to the book that you mentioned that Lack wrote and the comment section so that listeners can check that out. And of course, the link to All the Light That You Cannot See. It's a wonderful book. I've read it as well.
You've read it? Oh my God.
Very moving. Beautifully written.
Good. Awesome. Brilliant. Folks, thank you so much again. It's been really, really fun.
Absolutely.
Stay safe out there and have a good weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.